Well, good morning. This morning we are continuing on with the series that we've been in. This is the eighth week of our Practice Makes Present series. And if you're new, if you're just joining us, what we've been talking about is that anything significant that we try to do in life takes practice. It takes us committing to ourselves to something over time and engaging in certain practices that shape or form us. And nowhere is that more true than the shaping and forming of our character, about who we are on the inside and about how we practice our faith. And so we've been talking about these different practices, and we've said before, but it bears repeating in the eighth week, that as we accumulate each week these practices, we're not adding more and more things for you to do every week. We're not trying to fill up your to-do list, I promise. What we're trying to do is expose you to a set of practices that as you engage with them, maybe one or two as we go through this series will stand out to you as something that maybe God is nudging you to pay attention to and to begin practicing in your own life. And I was having a conversation with some folks last week, and they said that was happening, that some, you know, were kind of really challenging, and some of them were things they were already doing. And so I hope you're kind of bringing that attitude as we continue this series, because we've still got four more weeks after this. And today, to help in that regard, I'm actually going to pick up where Emily left off last week. This is sort of part B to her part A. Last week, if you weren't here, Emily talked about the practice of community. And I don't think that there's a more important practice that we as the church can focus on than to talk about this practice of community. If you missed last week, or if you weren't here, if you're new, we put all of our messages online. You can go listen to our podcast. But to kind of backtrack a little bit, to talk about what she said is essentially this, that the church is not this building. It's not this service. It's not any of the services that we do. It's us. The church is us. It's our relationships with one another and how we work on building those relationships through the practice of community, the practices of community. This is how we will continue to grow and live out what it means to be a church in this place. Now, I'm going to throw up her three takeaways. She gave us three things that she said we need to do to be able to practice community. I want to revisit those because I'm going to pick up on the third where she left off. She said the first is to commit to coming to church every Sunday. Well, gold star for all of you, because guess what? You're here. You're practicing community simply by being here and connecting with one another. The second thing she said was to get involved, to get connected. Gold star to all the guys at the retreat, getting connected and doing something beyond a Sunday. We do discipleship groups. We do connect groups. Lots of opportunities that we as a church provide programmatically for people to connect relationally and practice community. But this third one that she talked about is where I want to pick up where she left off last week. And what she said was this, that we need to initiate relationships with one another. You see, as much as we as the staff, we will continue to show up on Sundays, we'll continue to make sure somebody leads worship and somebody teaches, and we'll open the doors and put on the coffee, we'll create this space, we'll keep forming D groups, we'll keep providing connect opportunities for men and for women. But this one, initiating relationships, that's on you and that's on me. Moving outside of our comfort zone and moving towards other people. And it's going to take all of us doing that if we're going to really realize the kind of community that we want to experience in this place. Now, today I want to start here because I want to actually zoom in. I want to take some time to focus on this last step of initiating relationships. I want to give it a name, and I want to actually expand it a little bit. I want to give this a name, that initiating relationships to me is a part of another practice. It's the practice we're going to talk about today, and it is the practice of hospitality. Now, when I say that word, I have to stop right now because we all know the word hospitality. And when I say hospitality, something comes to your mind. Hospitality is a really interesting word. It's a word that exists in all cultures and all places. It seems to be a concept that's familiar to all people, regardless of where you live or regardless of what time. There has been a concept of hospitality, but it has changed over time. Maybe when you hear hospitality, what you think about is closer to what we might call entertaining. You know, it's Martha Stewart bringing out the really nice dishes and putting on a fancy meal with multiple courses and having friends over and enjoying great conversation. Maybe that's what you think about when you think about hospitality. For some of you, you work in hospitality. It is your business. The hospitality industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. Restaurants, hotels, and resorts that welcome and serve people. Maybe that's what you think about when you think about hospitality. Now, for me, as somebody who grew up in Mississippi, the word hospitality just seems like it's missing a word in front of it. Southern hospitality is something that I grew up with, hearing a lot about. Politeness, acts of kindness or generosity, or sharing good food with other people. That was something that I grew up sort of with this expectation. Welcome, y'all. Yeah, that's kind of what we do in the South, right? This is a near universal human concept, hospitality. But the reality is that what hospitality looks like and how we practice it, it changes from culture to culture. Like, what it looks like for us here in America is very different than what it would look like in another country. And if we were go to Japan or China or somewhere in Europe, hospitality and what they would call hospitality and what it would look like would look very different. And it also changes over time. If you look back even into our own culture and the practices of hospitality, a lot of things that probably our parents would have identified with as hospitality are very different than what we might think about today. And so it's really difficult to nail down what exactly is hospitality. And so I came across this definition a few years ago as I think about this practice that I think unifies some of the concepts in a helpful way. It's not perfect, but this definition is going to guide us with through this journey of talking about the practice of hospitality today, and it's this. This is the definition that I think of when I think of hospitality. Hospitality is making generous space for others' benefit at our expense. So it's not perfect, but it brings together a lot of concepts that are true across cultures and across time as it relates to hospitality. Number one, it's generous. Generosity is at the core of hospitality. The end is a benefit for others. It's something that we do for others. But secondly, it's not just disembodied generosity. It's not giving something to someone who you'll never meet. There's a space and there's a place. It's personal. It's embodied. People are involved in close contact and in proximity to one another. And in the end, it costs someone something to create this space, to be able to make room for other people in this way and to be generous in this way costs something. It may be time. It may be expending some other kind of resources. It may be expending emotional energy or effort to create this space. But hospitality requires something of us. And so as I listened to Emily last week talking about the practice of community and this idea of initiating relationships, and I was already thinking about this week in my message, I thought, there it is. We need to incorporate this practice of hospitality with one another. We need to practice creating generous space for others' benefit at our expense with one another. What would happen if we began to suddenly make room for one another in our lives? What if we began to initiate creating time and space for other people? Now, some of you are starting to get stressed just thinking about that. Like, I'm putting a big burden on you because in your mind, you're going to that idea of, well, I've got to get my house clean. And if I'm going to make space for people, it's got to be a clean space. And I can't just throw anything out there, you know, to eat. I've got to go to the grocery store and I've got to cook a meal. And then when everybody's gone, I have to clean up. And it is exhausting you even thinking about it. But let me just challenge that for just a second. What if it didn't have to be that way? What if it wasn't that complicated? What if hospitality was as simple as inviting people into things that you were doing in your life that you're already going to do? What if hospitality was, instead of going on a walk in your neighborhood or in the park nearby by yourself, you invited someone else. You made space for someone else to go with you. We're all going to watch the Broncos game, right? Like, what if you just invited people over to watch and don't worry about cleaning up? Don't worry about going and buying a spread and making, like, just invite people into your regular everyday life. What if we created space just for one another? We're supposed to be like family, right? What if we actually began to do that? I mean, New Denver, we're not going to stop doing Sundays. We're not going to go totally organic or communal or hippie on you, but we're going to keep doing these normal things. But what if we also started initiating the practice of hospitality with one another, creating generous space for others' benefit at our expense? What if we did that for one another? What kind of community would that create? If even half of us started doing this on a regular basis, what kind of relationships would we experience as a part of this community? I think it would be tremendous. I think it'd be amazing. But it actually brings me to a question that's going to drive the rest of our time to get together today, and it's this. So as we think about the practice of community, and as we think about the practice of hospitality with one another that builds community, I have a question, and the question is this. Who is our community for? What is the community that we practice with one another? What is the end? Who benefits from this community and these relationships that we share with one another in this place? Well, I mean, I think there's an easy answer that should come to all of our minds, and it's us, right? Like, we benefit. Like, we actually benefit. And just real quick as an aside, I've got to say, if you're here today and you don't know what you believe about God, you're not a follower of Jesus, you are totally off the hook. Like, you do not have to practice any of this stuff. You don't have to engage. You are free to live as independent a life. You can go home, lock yourself in your apartment, order some takeout, binge as much Netflix, buy yourself as you want. But the church doesn't get off. Like, the church, there's no way you can follow Jesus by yourself. Relationships are not an option for us. But I'll just say, regardless of what your faith perspective is, what we're starting to learn, what science is starting to teach us about the value of relationships, about how healthy relationships actually create greater health, greater mental health and physical health, greater sense of well-being in the world, greater sense of happiness, all of those things are tied to healthy relationships. But it still leaves the question, is it just us that benefits? Is this increase in health and this increase in well-being and this goodness that we experience from developing community and relationships with one another, is it just for us, or is there something else? I think there's a deeper dimension to what God had planned for community, and it's what we're going to talk about today. And to kick that off, I want to take a look at a verse that comes from the Bible that gives us some insight into how the early church and how the Bible, the New Testament in particular, thinks about this concept of hospitality that includes a dimension that goes beyond the walls of this room and goes beyond simply this community. So if you have a Bible and you want to follow along, we're going to be in the book of Hebrews today. If you don't want to do that, that's cool. We're going to put the verses on the screen. Chapter 13, the book of Hebrews. Just a quick note, if you're new to the Bible, Hebrews is a really interesting book. It's a part of the New Testament of Scripture. So it was written, we don't really know who wrote it, to be perfectly honest. It was written somewhere in the late 60s AD, so somewhere around 30 or 35 years after Jesus died and was resurrected, and people eyewitnesses attested to this fact. And so these are people who are practicing following the way of Jesus. They've been converted out of being, they're Jewish people, but they've been converted to following the way of Jesus. And someone, we're not really sure who it was, wrote this letter giving instruction and guidance about how to live following the way of Jesus in the face of mounting persecution from the Romans. At that time, after Jesus died, things continued to get worse with the Romans. And they continued to bring down persecution both on Jews and on Christians alike. And so the person who wrote this letter writes to them to give them encouragement and exhortation about how they are to live and continue following the way of Jesus in their life. So they're getting in some really practical things for their time and for their place about how to follow the way of Jesus. And in that, in chapter 13, there's a really interesting verse that gives us, shed some insight into this concept of hospitality and what it looked like in their culture and at that time and how that informs how we think about it today. So chapter 13 of Hebrews, verses 1 and 2, it says this. Keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. So the author begins here with an admonition to keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. So this is an admonition to keep building community within the fellowship of believers, within this community of faith. He says, keep loving each other as brothers and sisters. Now, if you have brothers and sisters, you know that that is not a perfect kumbaya all the time kind of relationship, that it involves conflict and sometimes challenging one another and sometimes fighting. It's messy. That's the church. But what the author is saying is keep on doing that. You are a family. You're not a family of blood, but you're a family of faith. your faith in Jesus joins you together, and keep on loving one another. You should do that. Keep building community with one another. But then he adds another dimension. The author says, do not forget to show hospitality to strangers. Now, it's really interesting here. Again, if you're new to the Bible, remember that we're reading this in English, but this was originally written in another language. It was written in Greek. And the word that gets translated as hospitality here, and you can trust your translations. Like, there are some really, really amazingly smart people who've done these translations. And that's the right word. But what's interesting is what's behind that word. So again, like the word hospitality, for us, it means a lot of different things. We just talked about that. It has a particular meaning for the original readers of this text. And the word that is behind that, that gets translated as hospitality, is this Greek word, philoxenia. Philoxenia, which is two Greek words that are put together. Philo, which comes from the word friend or friendship, and xenia, which comes from the word stranger. So it's putting together two almost antithetical concepts, friend and stranger. Essentially, it's this idea that you are to treat strangers the way that you treat friends. That's what hospitality is. That's the way that the New Testament thought about the concept of hospitality, that it was for people that you didn't know, but you were to treat them as if you already knew them, as if they were already friends, already part of your family. And then he adds this really interesting clause in there, right? He says, you need to keep doing this because some people have actually shown hospitality to angels without even knowing. What's that all about? That's kind of a weird little clause. Well, some scholars think that because he's writing to a set of Jews, he's referring to a story that comes from the Old Testament where Abraham, the patriarch of the Jewish faith, actually welcomed and entertained three guests who came to him. He showed good Middle Eastern hospitality, welcomed them in, gave them food, and it turned out they were messengers from God. But there's a deeper layer to it as well. There's this idea that when you entertain or show kindness or care or concern for strangers, then you may be getting more than you bargained for. You see, Jesus himself taught about this concept that sometimes when we show care and concern for those who are in need, we're actually doing it for him. There's this verse in Matthew, this story where Matthew, one of Jesus' closest followers, tells a story where he's teaching about the consummation of his kingdom, about the time when he's going to return and when there will no longer be debate about who Jesus is. It will be clear and obvious, and his kingdom is coming, and he's the king, and everyone knows it. And in that day, everyone's going to give an answer to how we lived our lives and what we did and how we used the time that we were given. And Jesus in this story says that he's going to come to some people and he's going to say, hey, you know what? I came to you and I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I came to you and I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I came to you, I needed clothes and I didn't have a place to stay and you gave me those things. I was a stranger and you treated me like a friend. You showed me hospitality. And then there's going to be another group, he said, that he's going to go to and he's going to say, hey, I came to you too. And you didn't do any of those things. I was hungry. You didn't feed me. I was thirsty. You didn't give me anything to drink. I needed clothes. I needed a place to stay. I was a stranger, and you turned me away. In that day, he said, it's going to be obvious to you. And I can just imagine people saying, wait, okay, no, wait a minute. No, I would have remembered Jesus if you came to me. Like, regardless of whether they did or didn't do these things, you know, which group they're in, I could see them saying, no, Jesus, I would remember if you, God, Son of God, if you'd have come to me and asked for those things, I'm pretty sure I would have given it to you. And he says this interesting thing, verse 45 of Matthew 25. He says, he will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did or did not do for one of the least of these, you did or did not do for me. He said, no, you don't understand. See, when a human being comes to you, when another person comes to you and has a need, and you turn them away, you're doing that to me. Jesus says that I am present with the stranger, with the person who's hurting or the person who's in need. And he ties this up into this concept of what it means to show hospitality. That sometimes when we show strangers the same kindness that we show to our friends and to our family, we're actually doing it to Jesus, treating everyone, even strangers, as friends. This is the core of what the Bible thinks of as hospitality. And this is a rich part of our family heritage as Christians. Because the early followers of Jesus, the people who read this letter in Hebrews, they took this really seriously and they began to practice it. And it began to really set them apart from the cultures of their day. There's a historian, Rodney Stark. He wrote a book called The Rise of Christianity. He's a sociologist and a historian. And he set out into this book to ask the question sociologically, how is it possible that an obscure cult-like religion that came out of Judaism ever made it out of the first century? How is it possible that we still are talking about a Jewish carpenter 2,000 years later? And what he pointed to is one of the key factors is this practice of hospitality. He said when you go back and you look at history, what you see is that there has been a universal experience through history of people have experienced terrible plagues and illnesses that have swept through cities and regions and killed hundreds or thousands, sometimes millions of people. And in that time, when you go back and you look at history, what you see is that there is a contrast that as soon as these followers who called themselves followers of the way, followers of Jesus, as soon as they start showing up in the first century, they begin standing out. Historians begin taking note of this strange sect of Christians who begin doing very, very strange things in these circumstances. You see, in the first century in Rome, when a plague would start, everyone who had the means, all of the government officials, all of the rich, the scientists, those who called themselves doctors, pagan priests, all of them were getting out of town. They were going as far away as fast as possible, leaving behind loved ones, leaving behind friends who were suffering and dying. But there was this weird group of Christians who moved in when everyone else was moving out. They were caring for the sick. They were caring for one another, but they were welcoming strangers as if they were part of their community and caring for them. And Stark says what's interesting is because they cared for one another, they actually lived longer. They actually lived through these diseases because they were caring for one another. And in the process, people who were not part of the faith became part of the faith because they saw this tremendous love lived out for others. This tradition of hospitality, treating strangers as friends, led them to create places where people were welcomed when they were sick and suffering. Hospital. That's where we get the word. Hospital comes from the concept of practicing hospitality. Hospice, same thing. This is a part of our tradition. There was a time when people were sick or where they were hungry or had needs or they were traveling and they needed a place to stay. They didn't look for a restaurant or a hotel. They looked for a church. They looked for a monastery. They looked for a group of people that were so set apart and different from the culture of their day that they welcomed strangers and treated them as friends. That's a part of our heritage. That's a part of the tradition that we're part of. So my question today is, so what do we make of that? So again, hospitality changes with time. It changes across cultures. What are we to make of that? Are we to start doing that ourselves? Are we to start taking in sick people? Is that what I'm advocating today? No, I mean, it's so much more complicated today. I mean, in the ancient world, Christians welcomed the sick and dying into their home because there was nowhere else for them to go. Now we have a really complicated but flawed multi-billion-dollar healthcare industry, So what do we do in the midst of that? I mean, in the ancient world, travelers and pilgrims, they looked to churches for places to stay. Now we just pull out an app and find out, what's a good deal for a hotel nearby if you have the finances to be able to do that. I mean, clearly times and cultures have changed. So what is the practice of hospitality? What is this expanded concept of treating strangers like friends look like for us? Well, I think it begins by asking the question, what does it look like to make generous space for others' benefit, both friends and strangers, at our expense? That same definition, I think, still guides us. What does it look like to create generous space for others' benefit at our expense, regardless of whether we know those people or not? And I'm going to suggest, as we wrap up our time this morning, I'm going to suggest three ways that I think we can all begin engaging in the practice of hospitality in our own lives. And the first is this. Start here. Start right here. If you look around the room, some of you don't know each other. Some of you are strangers. What if we began in this place, in this space that we create, New Denver creates every Sunday morning, we began treating strangers as friends and family? I mean, we put a lot of effort into creating these places and creating these spaces and encouraging our volunteers to be welcoming and inviting. And yet in the midst of that, we did a survey recently and we asked people to share their experience here at New Denver. What do they experience when they engage with our environments? And somebody put in one of their comments, Sunday morning is one of the loneliest hours of their week. That just kills me to hear that someone would come in and somehow we would let them slip through the cracks. So we can begin right here. Expend the energy to initiate a connection with someone you don't know. This is a great place to catch up with friends, and when we talk to volunteers about this, we want you to make time to connect with the people you know, but also look around. Somebody here, it's their first time. Somebody here is lonely. Somebody here came hoping that someone would connect with them. So take the effort, the energy to make some time and some space here, but also extend it out beyond this place. Maybe invite people to go get coffee. When you meet them here on Sunday, make sure that it goes out beyond this place. Go make space for coffee or have a meal. Do something together outside of this place. We want strangers. We don't only want to treat strangers like friends. We actually want strangers to become friends, right? Eventually, we want this reality to be a part of our community here. So starting here at New Denver. Second, when you go out of this place into your everyday life, your workplace, your neighborhood, wherever God has placed you, look around. Look around you. God's placed you right where you are supposed to be, where you live, where you work, and where you play. And there are people all around you who are strangers, who you can treat as friends. Do you know all your neighbors? Do you know their names? Do you know where they're from? Do you know what they do for work? Do you know their kids? Have you taken the effort or the energy to get to know the people that are right around you? What about the people that you work with? Are there people that you could move towards and begin creating generous space for their benefit at your expense? In my family, this begins in our neighborhood. We moved into our neighborhood almost 9 years ago, and we instantly set about, we wanted to get to know everybody on our block. And we got to know some people in the first couple of months, and then summer came, and I figured out, hey, I know how we could get to know our neighbors. I can share my love language with them, which is smoked meat. I love to smoke barbecue. And so we instantly made this decision. We're going to be front yard people, not backyard people. When we do a party, it's going to happen in the front yard, not the backyard. And we're going to make sure everybody on our block knows that they're invited. We invited our friends too. And suddenly, people who are coming together who've lived next to each other for years, who'd never met before, are meeting at our barbecue, eating delicious meats, and hanging out, having great conversation. And we've been doing that now for 8 years, almost nine. And the conversations keep getting better because the people keep coming back. And strangers have become friends. And not everybody participates. Not everybody comes. There's some people on the block that we don't know. But we are creating community and relationship within our block for strangers, for people that we didn't know before. That's our practice of hospitality. I don't know what it is for you. Maybe you're the person at work. Maybe you're the fun-loving person who invites everybody to happy hour. Well, whatever it is, look around you. Who are the people that God's placed around you, and how can you begin creating space for them? And the last one is where I want to really push you and challenge you a little bit, because I feel pushed and challenged as I think about this concept of showing hospitality, showing love, showing care, treating strangers as friends, and really embracing that when we see people who are in need and move towards them, invite them into our lives, that we're actually doing this for Jesus. I'm challenged because in our world, there are a lot of providers. It's a very systemic kind of system of world that we live in where, again, healthcare and housing and all of those things are very complicated, but people are slipping through the cracks all the time. And so the last is to pray for eyes to see. If we begin to practice hospitality, we will definitely build a stronger community here if we do this for one another. And if we begin to take this out into our neighborhoods, we will take those kinds of connections and relationships and we will enfold all of the people from our lives into that. But what about those who slip through the cracks? If we believe that Christ is present in the needs of every human being we encounter, we should be challenged to ask, how do we enter in? How do we enter in when there is often so much need around us? It's hard to know where to even start. What happens to the people who can't afford healthcare in the mechanized system that we have? Who takes care of them? What happened to the people who fall behind and can't pay for their rent and can't even afford to pay for a week-to-week motel? What happens to them? Sure, we have systems and we have nonprofit organizations, but lots of people fall through the cracks. Do we see them? Do we see them when they come through our life? My wife Kate and I have wrestled with this through the years as God has brought people on the margins into our life through a variety of different means. First time it happened in a really eye-opening kind of way was, I guess it was probably about 7 years ago. My boys and I took them to, at that time, their favorite restaurant, which was McDonald's. We went to lunch, and they were, I think, 6 and 9 at the time. And they started playing with these two kids on the playground and play area, and their mom was kind of nearby, so we struck up a conversation. I'll call her Natalie for the sake of this morning. And so Natalie and I started talking. Turns out she'd grown up in Denver, had been away for a while, and she came back, and she had these two beautiful boys. She said she worked with a preschool here in town, and she asked what I did. I said I was a pastor, so she showed some interest in the church, and I gave her a card and said, hey, you should come visit us on Sunday, and that was kind of it. A couple weeks later, she showed up. She came to church, brought her boys, and then she started attending kind of semi-regularly. Got involved, started serving with our kids, taking care of kids. And then one day, she was scheduled to take care of kids in Wambaland, and she didn't show up, which I thought was weird, but volunteers sometimes don't show up. And right before service was about to start, I wasn't preaching that morning, but I was in the back, and I remember I got a phone call, and it was Natalie, and she was just sobbing. And she said, I'm at this hotel down on Santa Fe, and we've been living here for the last week or so. I got kicked out of my apartment. We've been living here. I'm out of money, and I don't know what to do. And you're the only person I could think of to call. And so I said, okay, calm down. It's going to be okay. I'll be there in a few minutes. I'll pick you up, and we'll figure this out. And so I hung up the phone, and I started thinking, what are the services I can connect her to? What are the nonprofit organizations that I can send her to? Who cares for people who take care of homeless families? Like, who does that? And then I had another thought. I have a bedroom in my house that's going to be empty tonight. What if I just invited them to come stay at our house tonight? And so, as I often do when I have crazy ideas, I called my wife and I said, hey, are we crazy to invite this person and her kids that we barely know into our house, or are we crazy not to? And she said, we'd be crazy not to. So Natalie and her kids came and stayed with us that night, and the next night, and the next night, and they were with us for about 6 months altogether until we finally were able to transition them to Joshua Station, our partner who we work with, who cares for homeless families. And this is a really messy story. It doesn't have a great ending. She ended up dropping out of Joshua Station, and we've lost contact with Natalie and her kids. So this doesn't have a nice, neat bow on it. And I don't go out looking for homeless people to bring home. That's not the kind of person I am. But God has brought people on the margins through our lives a number of other times through the years. And I'm always challenged to ask this question: do I see that person as Christ? Do I see that person as someone worthy of love and care and concern, whatever that might look like? And I don't know what that's going to look like for you when you start to ask God for eyes to see the people on the margins around you. Maybe it's starting to notice that there's a single mom that you work with that's struggling to make ends meet. Maybe it's just showing up to Joshua Station and getting to know some of the families that we work with there. Maybe it's recognizing that in our neighborhoods, there are a lot of elderly people who live on their own and don't have family to look after them. And maybe we stop just passing by their house and go walk in and ask how we can help. How can you create space in your life for people around you who are struggling and at the margins? My prayer for you is that we'd be a community that begins to practice hospitality regularly with each other, that we would create space for one another. If we do that, we will have an amazing community. And if we extend that out into our workplaces and into our neighborhoods, we will invite people in. People will experience the love of God through us and the community that we create. And if we can just begin to open our eyes to see the people that are on the margins that are near us and see them as Christ, an opportunity to serve him as we serve them. I believe that God will give us that opportunity and that we'll be able to do that more and more each day. And so as we close, let's pray that God would give us clarity about how we can do this and open our eyes to these opportunities. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I just pray that you would challenge us to continue to take steps and move out. And wherever we are today, maybe it's a stress to think about even walking up to a stranger this morning. I pray that you'd give us courage. Maybe the stress is to go to our neighbors or coworkers that we don't know and to treat those strangers as friends. Maybe for some of us who've been doing that and the step is to see people in our lives that we don't know that seem to be on the margins, seem to be struggling for some of the basic needs. Help us to see those around us as you. Help us to see Christ in them, that every person created in your image is worthy of dignity and love and respect, and that community is a universal human need that you've created for all of us. Make us agents of your love as we go out of this place today, that we would share that love that we experience here this morning, that connection, that community. Share it with the hurting, with the broken, with the strangers that are around us every single day. And we pray these things through the Son and by the Spirit. Amen.